Hi, I'm Sabrina Petrofessa.
And I'm Lily Rugo.
And this is Earth's Mightiest Fangirls. Deep Sigh Edition.
Continuing the Deep Thoughts episodes, series, mini-series we suddenly went off on.
Honestly, don't know why we suddenly went with so many Deep Thought episodes and didn't decide to break it up with more, like, fun episodes. But here we are. We're having more deep thoughts about deep things. Today, it's queer baiting.
Yes, which is a concept I am vaguely familiar with, but as we're about to discuss, I'm about to learn a lot more.
All right. So for me, queer baiting is when the writers of a show know that the fan base is very much like into the idea of two characters together who would either be gay or a lesbian relationship, mm-hmm. but refuse to put them together, but still have the two of them do very, like, romantic type things.
Okay. That is not the definition that I thought it was, because I only have mostly one main source of, like, understanding queerbaiting, and I thought it was just people, fans, looking at a thing, and I thought it was mostly just fans looking at a relationship and seeing and making up their own theories and having it not confirmed. That makes sense?
No. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, there are, like, ships that will never be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and it has nothing to do with the sexuality of the characters or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, a crack ship, you know, like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or it's something that was maybe planned, but then fell by the wayside when something else happened and it was just a better storyline or whatever. You know, like, those will always happen. Mm-hmm. But queerbaiting, I feel like, is intentional,
mm-hmm.
to string along the LGBT fans who are like, oh my god, like, something might happen between these two, because the way that they're written feels so intentionally romantic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think the couple, the ship that you know most about, and mm-hmm. that I know that you're going to talk about, is John Locke.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
From BBC Sherlock specifically.
But
it does happen in other iterations of Sherlock as well, like even the Robert Downey Jr. movies, there was a lot of John Locke shipping, and you know, it happens a lot with Sherlock, where Sherlock is shipped with John Watson.
Basic.
Yeah. A lot
it's
of the...
It's just the ship as old as time.
Yeah. A lot of the couples that we mentioned in the gay ships for straight women, straight gays episode, are also kind of queerbaity. So, like, Destiel is also kind of a queerbaity. Well, it is a queer baiting relationship. And Steric, I would say, is a little bit the same, but also, I don't know. And the one that is near and dear to my heart that breaks me every time is Supercore on Supergirl, which is Supergirl and Lena Luthor.
Interesting.
So this would be Lex Luthor's sister and Supergirl, and the dynamic there is incredible, and this is the one that I will get heated over.
Okay.
So we're going to build to them, because I'm going to...
Okay. Here we go.
All right. So, not for nothing. Let's just talk about, I think, well, we can start with, I think, Destiel and, like, Steric, and then move on to John Locke, because it's going to be quick for those first two, and then John Locke we actually know about, and then I'll move on to Supercore, in which I will probably turn this into a rant. So Destiel is a supernatural ship, with the characters Dean Winchester and the Angel Castiel. Mm. It started off as kind of a lighthearted thing because way back when, 10 years ago in season 5.
Oh my god. Season 5 was 10 years
ago. Or like season 4 or whatever when Castiel made the appearance in the show. It was like he's a socially awkward angel but in a very attractive man's body. Because the way that angels work in this universe is that the angels like possess humans to be able to walk the earth. But they ask for consent first from the body.
The difference from demons, of course. Yeah, I can see that permission. They ask for consent
first to, like, use the body. So they go to, like, a godly person or whatever. But it was, like, I know that when I started watching the show, I knew that Destiel was, like, a big thing. Because, like, that was when I kind of started watching the show. And it kind of started where, like, Dean did have, like, these, like, weird comments. Not weird, but, like, it sounded like he was, like, flirting. And it was, like, all these little moments where it was, like, oh, my God. Like, I think that there's, like, tension here.
Okay.
Like, this could be a thing.
So that's, like, the first sign is you're just, like, I think I see something.
Yeah. And that's true for most ships where it's, like, I think I maybe see something here. And then it kind of snowballed, and then fans got, like, really, really into it, and then the writers kind of found out about it, and then they started making cheap shots in the show.
Oh, that's weak.
And quite frankly, I have seen some stuff from the actors recently and how much they don't like the ship.
And I can see how it would be annoying, like, if it's not gonna happen, and it's just getting strung along. That's annoying.
And I mean, my personal beef with it is, like, Castiel should have died on the show a long time ago. They just never did because the fans are so, like, gung-ho. You cannot get rid of him. And, like, there were multiple times where Castiel did die, but he got brought back because it was like, you can't break them up. And that's kind of why, in my opinion, the character is still alive and kicking.
Right, yeah.
You know? But there were definitely times where we're watching the show, and you can see that the writers were purposefully putting stuff in to be like, nudge, nudge, but it's never gonna happen.
Oh, bummer.
You know?
Yeah.
And then Steric was also kind of one of those because the writers knew how much the two were so, like, enmeshed.
So the main difference that takes it, I guess I would say takes the fun out of it, is when the writers are aware of it, is when the creators that be get a hold of it.
And, like, the thing is, like, there's a difference between the writers wanting to do something with these characters but not being allowed to by the because of the producers or whatever company that they're working for, the network or whatever.
And that's also happened many times
because you know, Legend of Korra did this, you know. Like, they built up to a lesbian relation or a woman loving woman, because neither of them I think are lesbians canonically. They built up to a woman-loving-woman relationship by the end of the series. And it didn't end with, like, a kiss or anything, but it was heavily implied that at the end of the series, the two of them were together. I think there's a difference between that, where they were building up to it as much as they possibly could.
And saying a statement that afterwards. Wasn't
letting them... Yeah. Or even, like, on a show like She-Ra that was kind of building up to it, because at the beginning they couldn't really do anything about making characters gay or lesbians or whatever, but they were able to start doing that towards the end of the show, and that's why She-Ra is kind of like a lesbian show now, because they were able to, like, finally get to it in the last couple seasons, you know?
That makes sense. Adventure Time did the same thing too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about Adventure Time. That's where I think I draw my line between queerbaiting and an actual attempt. That some people are really out there trying to make these stories happen, but the powers that be are not letting them. So they're getting as close as they possibly can, without actually doing
crossing anything. A line, getting in trouble. Yeah.
But then it's these ships that exist that are just expressly queerbaiting, that are just dangling nuggets down mm-hmm. and being like, hey, this might happen. And but it's probably not, and we're just going to show you little moments that make you think it's going to happen, but it's never going to happen because we're going to give them both girlfriends.
Right, right. And that, you know? And then just making the queerness the punchline.
Yeah. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's what kind of happened in Teen Wolf, where there were lots of moments between Stiles and Derek that were very like, this is like romantic, or this could be romantic. Like, Stiles risked his life for Derek. Stiles, like, there's a whole scene where Stiles is holding up a paralyzed Derek in a swimming pool because a monster is roaming around them and they can't get out because the monster can't swim, so it's not coming in the pool.
Okay.
They can't get out. But if they get out, they're going to get attacked. So it was like literally like he was keeping Derek up alive the entire for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or however long it was in the show. But like nothing happened after that, you know? Like there are a lot of moments like that in Teen Wolf where I understand why the Steric shippers were like, like, I get it. I personally didn't ship it, but like I saw it.
Right. And I think that's the other thing about queerbaiting is if it's obvious to the people who aren't in the ship, that's its own, that's another flag.
And then there's John Locke.
Okay. This is where I truly just big old gallon of dumb bitch juice. I never saw it. And I think that is because of my own inherent dislike of John and Sherlock ships, regardless through the ages. So every time I saw this, I would roll my eyes because I genuinely hate the Sherlock John ships. And so I never saw it in the entire four seasons that I watched. And there were times in the end, in the fourth season, so obvious. Like that was also because I was made aware that this existed. But the final season when they killed off Mary, I was like, this is bad. This is just a raging fire right now. I can see it. You can't deny this. I see it and I'm mad about it and it's bad.
Yeah, so the thing about John Locke is that, first of all, I think Stephen Moffat is trash. And he's trash to his fans. And so whoever I don't remember what his name, Mark Gatiss, I think, is the guy who plays Mycroft, who is also one of the co-runners of the show. He's also trash.
Oh, bummer. I liked his Mycroft.
I mean, as a character, he's fine. But like or as an actor, he's fine. But like,
As a showrunner,
I've never seen two showrunners at San Diego Comic-Con be so anti their fans.
Oh man, that was the whole vibe I got from Sherlock as I continued, is just they were making a mockery of their fandom, and honestly, to a certain point, even their own actors, like it just felt rude.
So I felt like, you know, in season one and season two, which is when I started watching, was like at the end of season two, like it had just aired and I watched those two.
In the 4 year hiatus.
Yeah, exactly. I could see how someone could ship them, but I didn't think it was like insanely present. I thought it was just people are watching the show and seeing their close relationship and seeing their fun dynamic and wanting them to get together, you know? And then season three happened. Which, I mean, the first episode of season three is basically just the writers going, we saw all of your fan theories and f*** you.
Yeah, that was the run right after Reichenbach Falls, right?
Yeah.
Okay, which again, I have seen nearly every modern adaptation of Sherlock Holmes. That is the worst Reichenbach Falls I've ever seen. That was, like, the fall itself, the revival of Sherlock Holmes.
This is for next week, Lily. This is for next week.
Yeah, you're right. We're talking about the queer baiting. I'm just saying everything about season three was just so disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it, there were some of the episodes I liked. We'll get into it. We'll wait.
There's only three episodes, Lily. What do you mean, some of the episodes? There's three episodes.
It's been a while. Yeah, okay. We'll get into it next week.
But that's the thing, is that, like, they started that season going, hey, we see you, and we don't care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were like, we think you're stupid.
And they played into it a lot more. Like, on mm-hmm. the episode where John is getting married, they have Sherlock be, like, over the top about it and being, like, kind of jealous, but also, like, super, like, anxious about making sure everything is right, and then doing a whole speech about being, like, his best friend and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they just put in these moments where you're like, oh, the writers are aware of how people feel about these two, and they're doing mm-hmm. what they can to make them feel, like, not compliant, but, like, feel seen, but not enough to mm-hmm. actually push towards it, you know? And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie, usually they bring in a woman to just be like, well, they can't be gay.
Yeah, yeah.
If it weren't for the fact that, like, Mary Watson is a canonical character who exists in yep. the canon. Like, she's there. She's there, she exists, and she is kind of, like, a nuisance to Sherlock when it comes to Watson. Like,
no. She's not a nuisance to Sherlock. She's John's first wife. They get married at the end of the story, once they solve the mystery.
No, I mean, like, in general. Usually isn't she just like, oh, well, you're just there, and, like, John's my friend, and I don't care about you.
I will rant about this next week, but no. Sherlock was never this possessive over John. This is another reason why I hate every modern adaptation of John and Sherlock.
Okay, then...
This is just yet...
If that's true, then I feel like that just plays into even more of the queer...
Yeah, no, it's every... The reason I never watched Sherlock, again, as a very obvious Holmes fan, is because I only ever heard about the shipping, and I only ever heard about how intense it was and how bad it was. Like, not bad. Well, bad. I only ever heard about the shipping, which is why I never watched Sherlock for a very long time, and then my friend finally convinced me. But yeah, that was the reputation I only ever heard about Sherlock, was the ship that was very intense but totally not real. And
yeah.
Baseless, for the record.
Yeah. And I mean, but like, that, at the end of the day, that's why a lot of people... Well, no. BBC Sherlock sucked for a lot of reasons, but there were so many people who shipped John Locke, and the creators just went... I don't care about you, but still yeah. like dangled it like
yeah they mo- it was a, it was a, they were mocking their viewers. They were mocking what even made the show sustainable, because yeah, I still love the first two seasons. I thought that those were, like, you know, solid good TV, and then the final two were just, I felt bad. I felt like I was getting made fun of the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if anyone, like, the fans are the ones who are giving you who are watching the shit that you do so that you can continue making this and continue making your money. So why are you laughing at us?
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. And again, I want to point out that there, like in Legend of Korra, there are times where it's not queer baiting. It's yeah. just, this is what they can do with what they have, and that's it. Like, so here's the thing. I just want to explain this example of Kurosami mm-hmm. to say how this is how you do it right. Because the creators of Legend of Korra knew that they had season 3 and 4 to look forward to create, so they were able to lay down mm-hmm. the groundwork in season 3 of Korra and Asami's friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, which, like,
I was gonna say, for the record, this was another one I didn't see coming, and at first I was kind of against, because I didn't think it was gonna happen. I had nothing against the two characters getting together. I didn't see it happening, so I was against the ship.
Yeah, there have been times where I've been like that. Definitely when I was watching the show live, I was like, you guys are never going to get this ship. You know that, right? Like, this is Nickelodeon. Yeah. This is a kids' show. We're never going to get a gay ship. Like, it's not going to happen.
Right. I was also against just, like, shipping friends, but that's, like, a recurring theme for me personally. Mm-hmm. But then, The Signs.
But then in season four, you're watching it, and you're getting all of these clues where, like, the only person Cora would write to was Asami, and, like, the only person she would really talk to was Asami, and, like, Asami mm-hmm. was very, like, deeply, like, she deeply cared for Cora in a more than just gal pals way.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you saw it building, and you saw how the two of them and how what they felt for each other, and you saw that come to mm-hmm. fruition by the finale of the series, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was really the feeling of, like, it didn't come all at once. It really was these two people who had a very long history together and already a very deep relationship realize they also had romantic feelings for each other. It wasn't just, like, thrown together in the last episode or something, you know?
Yeah. And, like, I have in the past put Legend of Korra on a list of queer baiting ships because they didn't end it with, like, a kiss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at the animation and you think of the soundtrack and you think of all of that kind of stuff that goes towards it, you can tell that they were clearly animating the two of these characters to be in love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they were directing the characters to be in love.
Yeah, the creators, after they confirmed it, apparently if you do, like, the side-by-side, it's the same kind of frame composition of Aang and Katara. That was the point. That was the final, like, reveal hint of, like, yeah, this is legit. We did it last time. We're mirroring it consciously again.
Yeah. And then, you get, okay, also quick, other, you know, queer baity ship. Like, Swan Queen in Once Upon a Time is a queer baiting ship because the two characters had a lot of chemistry in season one, and, like, they had a lot of moments where you were like, like, something could happen here. And full disclosure, I really do ship the het ship in that show, which is Emma and Captain Hook. Like, I really do. I don't ship Swan Queen, but, like, again, I understand where people are coming from, where there was kind of a groundwork being laid for the two of them that I think initially was friendship. Like, that they wanted to get these two people to be friends, because the basis of this show is, like, the evil queen adopts the savior of the town's child because, like, she had given him up for adoption, and then the savior comes back because of the child, and now they're both a mom to the same child. Just Emma's the biological mother who came in when he was 11, and the evil queen has been raising him from infancy.
So, like, a Tangled situation?
Kind of, yes.
Oh, okay.
So that was kind of happening, and it was, like, except it was, like, the real world. It was, like, our world. So it was, like, that kind of thing. And it was, like, oh, like, you could kind of, like, see a tension between these two. And it was mostly, like, hate. And it could be, like, an enemies to lovers kind of situation. And, like, throughout the season.
Between the moms?
Yeah, between the moms.
Oh, okay. That's the queen.
You can kind of see how they could have easily made these two the, like, main ship of the show. Because, like, a really good enemies to lovers could have been a really good enemies to lovers.
That's a really tough one to pull off, but when it works, it's so good.
But they didn't do it, but they also kind of laid in little pieces throughout the series to be like,
Oh, bummer.
Which sucks. And then we get to Super Core.
Buckle in.
So, I did, in fact, last night watch a rant video about these two. Because I was like, you know, I need, like, someone else's anger to sink in as well. Like,
yeah.
So Lena Luthor gets introduced in season two of Supergirl. And this is, I feel like, mostly because the show has moved networks. It was on NBC, and now it's on CW, and they changed locations, and they added new characters, and they changed dynamics and whatever. But she gets added in season two. And Lena Luthor is Lex Luthor's sister.
Okay.
The dynamic here was, at first, like, you think it's going to be, like, another super
enemies.
Luthor enemies kind of thing, where it's like, oh, they started as friends, but, like, blah, but then, like, it all festers, and Lena's actually evil, but, like, no, that never happens. Lena's is a gem.
I love her.
I love her so much. And they just... You know, the first season that they were together, like, it was like, you know, I feel like it's there, but, like, Kara really, really cares for her friends, so, like, this could just be that.
Okay.
And then she does the, like, Superman Lois Lane carry for Lena.
Oh, that's iconic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she's flying with Lena in her arms, and you're like,
yeah.
You cannot do this.
You can't deny that.
You cannot do this where she is literally carrying her in her arms as if Kara is Superman and Lena is Lois. Like, you can't do that.
Right. Yeah. No, of course not. That's so obvious.
It is such Even a I know parallel. That. It is such a parallel. So you're like, okay. I don't know what they're trying to do here. But, like, that's a move.
I see it.
And, like, also, like, every season, Kara has some, like, rotating boyfriend or some rotating boy drama, and it's so annoying, and I hate it so much.
How many seasons are we in? How many seasons?
Season six is coming out, and it's gonna be the last season.
Okay.
It just recently got, like, announced that the next season's going to be the last season, which is fine, because I feel like shows shouldn't go on for longer than six seasons anyway. But then, like, there are so many times where Kara saves Lena's life, and Lena saves Kara, and Lena saves Kara as Supergirl, and Lena's just always a good person, and they have this incredible dynamic. And then, and then finally, in season five, at the beginning of the season, Kara tells Lena her secret. Willingly. Is like, I'm going to tell. And there were many times throughout the series where she almost tells Lena, but then Lena says something that, like, makes Kara decide not to do it, because Lena's big thing is trust and, like, needing to feel trust in the people around her and that they're not lying to her. So that, like, also weighs on Kara heavily, that she's got this really big secret.
Right, of course.
That, like, Lena is gonna go off, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And, like, she kind of does. But the coming out scene, basically, is Kara in tears. Tears coming down her face, apologizing and just being like, I have to tell you, I have to, like, sure, like, the scene is so emotional that it literally does feel like she's coming out to her girlfriend. You know, that she's revealing this secret to the love of her life, to be like, I just want to finally be open with you and be there for you in every single way, and I know that I've been lying to you for the last, like, 4 years of our friendship, but, like, I have to tell you this, and, like, it's so raw and emotional that you cannot tell me it was all platonic. You cannot tell me that it was platonic.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And then, so the whole season is really just the two of them fighting, because, like, Lena is really upset by this and upset by the whole situation, and she feels deeply, deeply betrayed by the one person in her life she felt she could trusted always, always count on. Which, like, the drama, the angst, so good. And then also, like, in previous seasons, she, like, Lena has, like, sent Kara whole bouquets of flowers, like, hundreds of bouquets of flowers.
As you do for a pal.
Exactly. When Kara almost lost her job, Lena bought the company.
Ooh.
To make sure that Kara didn't lose her job. I'm sorry. Do you have any platonic friends who would do that for you?
Yeah.
I mean, no, we don't know anybody that rich, but still.
I know. I think once we're done with this, there are things about this that I would do want to talk about, because, like, the reasons why I miss so many queerbaiting signs. Then there are some other moments where you're just like, bruh, I 110% would take a bullet for all the closest people in my lives.
Okay,
but I'm also not sure I would buy companies or send flowers.
While they're fighting, or not while they're fighting, like, immediately after, like, to apologize to Lena for always keeping the secret, she's, like, flying to France and flying to Italy to buy, like, her favorite croissants and coffee, mm-hmm. and flying back to be like, look, here you go, stuff directly from that place you really liked on that corner in France, like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and to be like, here, like, you, who does that? No one does that.
Yeah.
Like, I know that we're living in a super, like, it's a supernatural world where people have supernatural gifts and are able to do these things in the blink of an eye, but, like,
But also,
can you imagine having someone willing to do that for you?
Mm-hmm.
That's not platonic.
This reminds me, and I mentioned it in the Boy Love episode, but, like, the Chinese drama I was watching, it's super censored, right? Like, they, at no point is it clearly stated that these two men are in love with each other. But the way that they act and everything that they do, you, like, I'm dumb as a rock and I picked that one up. So,
yeah,
there's just certain things that platonic friendships do not do. Which was the other red flag for Sherlock. After a certain point in time, I was like, okay, I see it now. Like, I can't deny I see it now.
Mm-hmm. I have two more big points to just,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
about these two. There is a scene where one person is, like, reminiscing about their boyfriend and being like, because he died, and it's like, oh, I wish I could have saved, mm-hmm. you, blah, 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 blah. The same music plays as it shifts to Lena. The same, like, romantic song plays, mm-hmm. as it shifts to Lena staring at a photo of her and Kara, and then it shifts to the same photo, but in Kara's hands. And they're both thinking of each other at the same time, looking at the same picture while a romantic song is playing over the scene, and you cannot tell me that they're just, like, really upset about their best friends not being in their lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And listen, I've gone through friendship breakups. I understand the hurt. Like, I get it. Like, mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah, those suck.
But that was not platonic.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, make your last point, and I'm going to ask, and then I'll ask my question.
My last point is that in the finale of this season, basically the whole season was that the bad guy was trying to get everyone to, like, live their lives virtually in, like, a contact lens world where they all, like,
mm-hmm.
basically turn into the Matrix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're all living in VR. But mm-hmm. Supergirl is trying to be like, hey, like, have some, like, she's in the virtual world talking to people about taking the lenses off,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in an attempt to be like, hey, like, you gotta live in the real life. And I know that VR is nice because you can take away all your hurt, but you have to have, mm-hmm. hope in the real world and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Lena is talking to the main bad guy in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got, like, a similar speech going on. Like, they are, the two of them are running parallel speeches at the, mm-hmm, same time. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm sorry, is that platonic? That the two of them are, like, saying the exact same things, because you could be like, they're talking about each other, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, it's,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
they could be talking about each other, and, like, there's so much hurt in the world, like, the hurt that they did for each other,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot, mm-hmm. of hope, too, like, the hope for new beginnings with each,
right,
other.
Right, right, right.
And, like, all of, right. this stuff, and you're like,
it's just stressed out.
I'm so stressed because I'm so mad. And all the while, mm-hmm. during the season, they had this, like, man in Kara's life,
mm-hmm.
who they've shared so few scenes with that they have tried to force a relationship on the two of, mm-hmm. them. And, like, honestly, he comes into the show, like, being an asshole towards Kara the entire mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, actually, I have a really good motive. Because I'm, like, trying to find my friend's killer. And, like, then Kara's like, oh, my God, Heart of Gold? And it's, like, awful. Oh, no. It's, like, awful. It's really terrible. And, like, and I just don't care. And, like, there's a scene where, like, he risks his life for her when he doesn't know that she's Supergirl and she could have, like, taken the bullet or whatever.
Been fine.
And everyone's like, how romantic. But you're not, like, telling me that Kara and Lena haven't been romantic this entire fucking season? Really?
So my question is, I'm not super familiar with the CW, but I do know it's very liberal and progressive. So why... So I have two questions. Why don't you think the CW has done it?
Because there's already a gay relationship on the show, Lily.
So oh, you think,
like,
it's a one?
We gave it to you. We gave you Alex. So, like, here you go. And there's also a trans character. So it's like, here, we also gave you the trans character.
Oh, so you think it's a checklist quota thing? You think they're...
Yeah.
That's a
because
bummer.
Because there have been gay characters in other like, there was a gay character in Arrow for a while, but he came in and out, and then they had, like, Oliver Queen's son come out as gay, and it's, like, this whole thing, and, like... Like... I mean, I really did like the way that they went about with making William gay. I really liked that. Which was Oliver Queen's son. But they also had other gay characters that they didn't really do much, and they were like, I have a boyfriend. But, like, it was just, like, that was it. Like, you know, like...
Right.
So, I feel like the only two shows where there's kind of LGBT representation that kind of works on CW, specifically in their, like, DC TV verse, their Arrowverse or whatever, is Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl. However, Supergirl also is just so bad at this queer baiting thing.
They're just missing the big one. Okay.
They really are. They really, really are. And, like, the rant video that I was watching, he was, like, so mad because the reason why he got really heated was because it was some, like, E! News article about season 6 and maybe building on the romance with the man. And he was like, you're kidding me, right? They've had, like, 5 scenes together. Who cares about them? Like, they're nothing. They don't mean anything. It's just, he's just there, you know?
Right. So my second question is, you don't think they're going to do it at all. They're not going to do a surprise twist in season 6. You think they're fully committed to ignoring it?
I think they're fully committed to ignoring it. Oh, that's a bummer. I also completely missed the big one. The 100th episode of Supergirl was all about her relationship with Lena.
Oh.
Yeah. It was an episode in which a alien character was giving Kara the chance to go back in time to test out different versions of reality where Kara tells Lena earlier in her friendship who she is and, like, all sorts of things, you know? Like, where she gets to test out, like, if she never became friends with Lena at all, if she became friends with Lena but never told the secret, if she became friends with Lena and immediately told her the secret. Like, all these different scenarios, basically.
Okay.
But it was still all about the two of them.
It's all about that entire relationship.
And it was the 100th episode. The 100th episode of Supergirl was about Supercore. So.
I understand that you're frustrated, obviously, but do you feel mocked the same way with John Locke? Or is it just, you're just mad?
I feel like they are, I don't feel mocked. I don't feel mocked, but I feel strung along.
Okay, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Which I think is part of queerbaiting, is being strung along by the writers, because they give you the moments, but they don't put anything behind it. Because they're not going to allow that push.
Which, this sounds absolutely insane to watch, because we're not in China. You can have full-on queer relationships in your TV shows. And again, the CW does this.
And the thing is, like, I feel like the part of the reason why they're not, like, doing it is because the lesbian in the show is Kara's sister, so it's like, well, they can't both be a lesbian, and it's like...
they can't have too many gays in the family.
First of all, they're adopted. Or, like, Alex isn't adopted, but Kara is. Like, Kara's an alien, so she was adopted by Alex's family.
Right.
So, like, not like it's genetic. Which, also, gayness, I don't think is genetic, so...
Yeah, you can have multiple queer people in one family.
Like, you can have multiple straight people in one family.
Who knew?
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that was possible. So, yeah, exactly. Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I think in all of the examples... I think in all the examples that we listed before, I was never someone who shipped them. So I never really felt the brunt of the, like, frustration. I was just like, well, I'm not watching for that reason, so I can enjoy this without, like...
worrying about it.
Yeah, freaking out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, is Supercore just that for me?
It sounds like it's so obvious, too. It sounds like it's even if you didn't ship it, you couldn't deny that this was not platonic.
It is. Oh, and at the end of season four, yep, Lena kills her brother for Kara.
Oh.
He gets brought back because of some other, like, madness with, like, the Crisis on Infinite, like, crossover thing that the CW does with those shows. He gets brought back to life. But still, Lena kills her brother. It is an action that she took.
Mm-hmm.
To save her friends, but mostly Kara.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. The list of things that people will not do for deep platonic relationships.
Kill your family.
Because for me, the one that, like, everyone goes to is, like, risk your life and things like that. Like, people will get very hung up on that one point. And that's why it never worked for me, because, like, yeah, I'd risk my life for a lot of different people in my life, but I don't love them like that. It's the other moments.
I mean, yeah. But, like, I don't know. I just think, especially in television and film, that, like, sacrifice yourself for your partner is, like, the epitome of romance. You know?
It is. I blame Romeo and Juliet. I mean, there's a lot of things to blame, but I think that's, like, because it was my go-to, it was a lot of people's go-to of just, like, death equals ultimate love. And I'm like, that's weird.
But, like, that's the thing, is, like, the sacrifice play has always been played as, like, a romantic gesture towards your, you know, like, that they would genuinely lay down your life, like, their own life for you, you know? I feel like that's always been part of the, like, romance thing. Mm-hmm. When it comes, specifically in, like, kind of action-type stories. Even in not-so-much action stories, but, like, I think it plays up a lot more in action.
Mm-hmm. And I can see why queer people who crave good representation and crave these stories and want to see themselves in it, I can see why that's, like, the go-to play, too, of, like, they, for, you know, till somewhat recently, whatever, you couldn't be canonically on-screen queer, so you had to pick up the crumbs that you had, and then when it felt like the writers were just throwing them at you, to be, just to end up to be ultimately rude, you felt gaslit, you felt mocked.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is, like, we did discuss the different examples. Like, I kind of laid out some of the different examples of queerbaiting, and they genuinely are examples of queerbaiting. But I just was never one of the people who shipped it, so I can't pull those examples out of the top of my head to be like, this is exactly, like, the moment where the queerbaiting happened, you know?
I'm trying to think if there's one I can do.
And I also have not watched Sherlock in so long because I refuse to, so I can't really pull out examples off the top of my head for them either because of how long it's been since I've watched the show.
The Christmas special broke me. That was when it got me. Because, again, I loved the first two seasons, and then the Christmas special happened, and I was like, wait, okay.
I forgot about that.
It wasn't good. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But Christmas special broke me.
For next week.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the moment in it, but I'll remember by next week.
Yeah, but like The thing is that this is kind of cruel. Because the queer baiting in general is cruel, because the writers are aware.
She's saying cruel. It sounds like you're saying cool.
Cruel. Yeah, with C-R-U-E-L.
Sorry.
The accent challenge. All I'm saying is that it's mean. It's mean is what it is. Like, you know that you have all of these people who are following your show and really, really, really want these two characters together. And you can't tell me that the CW has not done this before, because, like, or any network. There have been networks who do this before where, like, random characters appear and you're like, there is chemistry between these two. We did not plan for this, but it's there. So let's just play it up more. But they refuse to do that with characters who will be perceived as gay or are gay.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it's, again, it's mean because, like, it's there and we see it, but you refuse to do it. You refuse to make it possible for the people who it would mean the most.
Mm-hmm. It's disrespectful to the people who've made your show what it is. Like, the only reason it's popular is because people watch or are invested. And the other thing is, at this point in time, it's 2020. You don't... What are you scared of?
Really, though. And, like,
why... Like, if you're mainstream in the U.S., what are you scared of?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I feel like at the end of the day, these networks and these shows and these showrunners are afraid of being labeled as the gay show.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the only reason anyone would watch them is because they're the gay show.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, like, more gay characters than there are straight characters. But, like, that, who cares? Like, I'm so sick and tired of living in a world where people who can't 100% relate to a character can't enjoy the piece of media that they're watching. Like, can you also imagine a world where white people can't relate to Black Panther or, like, Crazy Rich Asians or any of those things? Like, we can still relate, not on the same level, but you can relate.
Yeah, it's a good story. It's a good piece of media. Also, statistically, you're not the majority anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So there
you can't tell me in this entire... Anyways, yeah.
There are just stories to be told that you as, like, me as a white person can watch, like, people of color live their life on screen and not feel like I'm being left out.
Mm-hmm,
and I can still relate to those characters in my own way that has nothing to do with race. And I think straight people can do the same thing with gay people.
It's totally possible. I promise. You're gonna be okay.
You really are. If you just suck it up.
Cowards. Anyways.
So, that's really all I have to say about it, is that, like, I know that there are a lot of definitions of queerbaiting for a lot of people, and that, like, depending on who you're talking to, something could be queerbaiting and something could not be. Like, the same ship could be queerbaiting for one person, but not queerbaiting for another person, you know? But for me, when I think of queerbaiting, it's about the writers knowing and having the intention to never put two characters together, but still put down these scenes that are romantic in nature, but know that they're never going to follow through. And even put some, like, arbitrary boyfriend or girlfriend in the middle to be like, well, see, they're not gay.
Yeah, the no homo significant other, that's honestly, that's a flag of when you know that they're scared.
Yeah. Which happened a lot in Supergirl. A lot for both of them.
Yeah.
So many unnecessary boyfriends.
Gross. deep sigh.
But yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's it. I just think queerbaiting is awful. It's mean. And we need to stop doing it.
Mm-hmm. It's 2020. Come on, guys. Stop it. You don't have to do this anymore.
If there are two characters, regardless of gender, that have chemistry together, do something about it, you cowards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I gotta say on that. You got anything else, Lily?
No.
All right, then. With that, we'll be with you till the end of the line. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSabrinaPet. You can follow Lily at Lily_Rugo. You can follow the podcast at EMFangirls. And you can check out our website, earthsmightiestfangirls.com. If you want to talk to us about queerbaiting, like, what's queerbaiting to you?
Or what are some of the, like, most egregious queerbait ships that you've seen?
Yeah. Let us know. Mm-hmm. Let us know. Because I know that there are more out there. We just have not had the time nor the knowledge to talk about them. Like Merlin. Oh, my God.
I've heard tell of the legend.
Yeah. Like, we didn't even touch Merlin. But that, it's there. Yeah, so just, like, email us at emfangirls@gmail.com. And if you liked this episode, please leave a comment or a review on Apple Podcasts. That would really, really help the podcast. And if you want to, like, rate us and review... I already said review. But, like, if you want to rate us on Apple Podcasts and, like, follow us on Spotify and all those places, like, that would really help, too.
Thank you to Dexter Britton for letting us use their song Wonderland. And thanks to us for editing and producing.